Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 1122.ZC0401, certificate number 38846. Second sleep.
Hey, morning.
Morning?
Yeah, what time is it?
10:30?
See, I got the whole night ahead of me.
Breakfast?
Oh, yeah, most important meal of the day.
So this Da Vinci sleep is working out?
Oh, I'm percolating, Jerry. I'm telling you, I have never felt so fertile. I'm mossy, Jerry. My brain is mossy.
I think I need more sleep.
It's a thing that the future might not know about our time.
I'm hoping that every one of our episodes could be described thusly.
That's kind of our tagline. It's a thing you probably know, or do you?
Yeah.
But it's a weird thing that we take for granted that right now, at a certain time of day, pretty much all of us will like just kind of turn around like a troop of zombies and head for our respective horizontal surfaces and then like lie down at about the same time. So civilization will disappear as we all head to our horizontal surfaces.
Well, now you're talking about the normals who all go home at the same time and who go to sleep at the same time.
Because you've never had that kind of Stepford suburban
That's
life.
That's right, man. That's
With the white picket fence.
Well, actually,
the well-adjusted family life.
I do have a white picket fence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But that's cosplay. That's a beard to conceal the fact that...
To conceal all the bodies in your basement.
Yeah, late at night, I've got my leather pants on and I'm...
When neighborhood children go missing, nobody's ever like, let's check that out. Oh, no, it's got a white picket fence. This guy's obviously...
No, that guy's in there dancing the shaman's dance. But yes, you're right. At night, this is a frustrating thing for me as a night person, that everything, all of civilization, all of human endeavor goes away, shuts down completely. I can't get a roast beef sandwich past 9 o'clock at night.
Not in Seattle.
Barely past 7 o'clock at night.
I share your chronotype.
Yeah, that's right. We are both late wakers.
Or in the parlance of whoever wrote the book on this stuff, we are owls.
Oh, we're owls.
We're not larks.
No.
Larks are awful.
Which would you rather be, an owl or a lark? I think it's clear.
Well, there's a stereotype. Owls are wise. Yes. Larks sing. Now, you probably consider yourself a wise singer. So it's tricky for you.
Yeah, but I don't sing like a lark. I sing like an owl pretty much.
You don't, you're not a Disney princess. You don't wake up and stretch and like little forest squirrels and birds put your cloak over your shoulders. It may be that we're speaking to an audience that does not have to spend a third of its time just turned off.
Well, now let's think about that. Is there any living creature on Earth that doesn't have a period of rest?
Senator Ted Cruz.
Oh.
He just kind of sits there.
Late at night, he's out Zodiac killing?
I think he just like sits eating soup in front of infomercials.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to say sits and eats live bats.
Yeah, he also eats. No. See, that's the shaman's dance. Ted Cruz is just doing like the gelatinous cubes set. I think at a certain microscopic level, I bet there are amoeba that have no dormant.
Amoeba just go, rah, rah, rah.
Maybe.
I feel like our biologist listeners are going to tweet us about this.
They don't have the same germs as us. They have no idea.
They're going to at you.
Bacteria lack a central nervous system. This is a thing I just thought of in my head and not something I looked up online.
You can see right through them and you could see if they had a central nervous system, which they don't.
You could see if they had a little alarm clock or white noise machine.
No, they just have a center.
They don't. They do have, even little tiny things have circadian cycles. So they're attuned to 24-hour day and night.
But does that go all the way down to tiny little, do their cilia start vibrating in a different direction?
After Letterman? But even though they do have some kind of, you know, blue-green algae, for example, do have some kind of
circadian.
Yeah, they have their photosynthesis tuned to a clock. It doesn't mean they have some 8-hour dormant period.
They don't rest. They keep on keeping on.
They're like some tech startup IPO guy that can get by on no sleep.
So they're either going or they're growing, but they're never slowing.
What is that a reference to?
I just made it up.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
Is it a bumper sticker?
How do you, could be soon.
How do you visualize
they're either, it? They're either going or they're growing. They're never slowing.
So it's possible that we're speaking to some kind of fungal life or robotic life that does not need the kind of reset that higher mammals and other creatures in our time get from sleep.
But even robotic life is going to need to power up.
Like
somehow.
Like to download a new version from Apple?
Well, I mean, they have to be, I guess if they're nuclear powered, they're still going to need a period where they discard their old fuel and put new fuel in. There's always going to be a cycle of some kind.
Well, it's kind of a mystery about why we have it, right? Because it seems evolutionarily like it's a downside that you're vulnerable for 8 hours at night when lots of things with sharp teeth and claws are out hunting.
Right.
You're soft. You're in a tree hoping for the best.
We're not alone in this, though. All of our
sure.
fellow mammalians are also doing it at some point.
So there must be some advantage to it. We're not 100% sure even today in our day what it is. And I'm sure our listeners know. They know the answer. They're not going to write us.
Right. No, they can't write us. They're well in the future.
They have a different chronotype. Their chronotype is not in your time frame.
But we're investigating this all the time now, right? There's sleep science.
Like you and me?
Well, you and I definitely.
In our lab. But, yeah, there are scientists who have, for example, kept rats from sleeping for 3 weeks.
Oh, what a great job.
And guess what happens? The rats die. So the mechanism is not clear. But
our futurelings are not just giant rats who are like, that's one more rat reference.
This is before the uprising, you know, before the giant uprising when they put us in mazes. There's some theories that it's definitely some kind of cognitive reset. That having this big unwieldy brain we've evolved comes with side effects. And it's like, like when your laptop has too many processes running.
Right.
And all you can do really is turn it off and turn it back on again.
Yeah, I've read that, you build up in your short-term memory or your short-term experience all this energy of a whole day. And in order to utilize it at all or put any of it into deeper storage, you have to go through this sort of chunking process in sleep to discard what's not useful, contextualize what is useful and put it away somewhere.
Yeah, I think there's some research showing that it's actually a paring down process. Like you need to actually like forget, like you, all that extra synaptic firing that's going on during the day, you've got to get rid of some of that except for what you're actually going to need. And I think people are generally aware of that. Like I had a lousy day yesterday and I was just so excited to go to bed.
Get rid of it all.
Because I knew like the four or five stupid things I was worrying and churning about in my head, like the tax check that bounced because my bank told me it would draw from the other account and it didn't.
I would like 25% less synaptic firing.
Like all the time?
Yeah. If I could figure out a way to target the muting. If I could mute certain synaptic firing and not other synaptic firing, I don't want it across the board.
Have you tried just being like kind of a dummy? Just like watch reality TV?
This is the presence process, right? I mean, this is...
You're making a callback to a thing that happened before we started recording.
But people are always telling me to live in the moment. And I often feel like living in the moment is just...
It's just going to be all these moments.
Well,
that's the last thing I need.
That, it's like, I'm living in the damn moment and it sucks. No, I feel like it's just a conscious effort to have 20% less synaptic firing is what it feels like to me. Everybody's suggestion about like, no, calm and focus on your breathing and, all these tips and tricks, they just feel like... Basically, like try and stop.
Yeah, in our era, the tip and trick I think is cannabis.
Oh yeah.
That's what everybody says.
I can't do that, and neither can you.
No.
So we're just sitting here in a non-cannabis
in a hellscape.
Non-cannabis tempered hellscape.
Our weed-free dystopia while everyone else seems so blissed out and mellow.
Yeah.
And we're just like, "But what about the dolphins? The dolphins are dying." You told me earlier this week that you are not sleeping super well.
Oh, I've even told as an you this. Owl. I've told you this many times before, just earlier this week.
I guess specifically you told me that you were very grouchy because you weren't sleeping well.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
Like a rat about to die.
I haven't been sleeping well for a long time, and it was weird to me because I was always an epic sleeper.
Up top, bro.
Yeah, that's Woo! Right. I could get 10 hours of sleep easily. I was on a, like we've discussed before, I had a cyclical emotional life as a bipolar person. And when I was on the downside, boy, I would sleep 14 hours.
So and would you love it? Or were you like, this is not good, but all I...
Well, because when your waking life is kind of a bummer, yeah. Checking out in sleep is such a gift.
Right.
When you're suffering from depression, you just like, take me, sleep. In particular, I didn't have nightmares. I wasn't somebody who was restless in bed. You know, I would sleep and just, I'd wake up and I'd be like, oh no, reality is still here. But lately, the last 5 or 6 years, I guess, my life has been characterized by a lot more anxiety. I never felt like I had anxiety, but I have it now. And I lay awake in bed at night. I wake up in the morning and I've only gotten 4 hours of sleep, like day after day. I know it's taking a toll on me, and I've got melatonin, and I've got my phone set so it shuts off. I put blackout curtains in my room. I'm doing all the things to try and have my room be a sanctuary. There's no TV in there.
Do you only use your bed for sleeping and
no,
sex? That's what I always say. Don't read in bed, then you'll associate it with wakefulness.
Yeah, I do other things in bed. Besides,
you're doing all the things minus one.
Yeah, right.
Ambien?
I don't want to take Ambien.
I never take anything but melatonin.
Yeah, I don't want any. I do not want any prescription drugs in my life. I believe it is something I can solve, but boy, I'm struggling. And part of it is I have things to do in the morning now, where 15 years ago, I could sleep 14 hours because nobody cared. You know, I didn't have anywhere to be.
Only a rock musician could ramp up to the high stress sellout life of the podcaster.
Yeah, that's right. Like, I mean, back in,
you're the only person in the world who's like, oh, podcasting. I got the old 9 to 5.
It's true. It's true. I mean, I used to live a life where the band would, you know, if I didn't get there by 6 p.m., they'd be like, oh, he's probably still in bed. But now I have to get up at 9:30 in the morning to do these podcasts.
Because I might be here. I might be at the door like with bagels. Hey, John.
When was the last time you brought bagels?
I brought donuts.
Like 3 months ago. you don't get like...
In the time frame of our listeners, 3 months is nothing.
What have you done for me lately?
What they're going to hear is like, oh, Ken brought John donuts.
Oh, one time.
Also, I'm not... Our West Coast bagels are nothing to write home
That's
about.
True. That's true.
I'm going to be a bagel snob, even though I probably couldn't taste the difference, you know, if there was a gun to my children's head, which would be a weird scenario.
Taste the difference, Ken.
Which of these bagels is water taste from it. Brooklyn?
Taste the difference. I can't taste the difference.
I have a very particular set of skills. You're not alone, by the way, in your insomnia. Mm. 50 to 70 million Americans report trouble sleeping. In fact, the average sleep time per day in the U.S. is lower than almost anywhere else in the developed world, 6 hours and 31 minutes, which is not what we need. That's not good for us.
No, if I look at my clock and say I'm going to get 6.5 hours of sleep, I feel like, okay, good. But I know it's not good. I mean, okay, good, because it's better than 4.5 hours of sleep, but I know it's bad for me.
Here's what a tender, quivering snowflake I am. I kind of need 8 hours. And if I get like 7 hours and 20 minutes, I'm kind of like pissed for the rest of the day. And I can tell.
And you can,
I'm off my game.
You're good enough at sleeping that you can say like, well, time for sleep, and get 8 hours?
I feel like my only kind of anxious relationship with sleep was as a child, you know, living halfway across the world. We would fly back to Seattle every summer. And flying east is just murder. So I'd like sleep on the plane. I'd be groggy during the day because I'm a 9-year-old kid. And then I just would lie awake all night. And you know what's terrifying if you're kind of a slightly neurotic 9-year-old is just being the only one awake in a big house. And I should have just got up and read a book or something, but I didn't. I just kind of lay there with my thoughts feeling bad because I wasn't sleeping every second. And just the awareness. I mean, it's the great thing about being an owl now is the awareness that no one else is awake. It's just kind of you and the universe, right?
Right.
Like there's this great kind of lonely, I'm on my own mountaintop feeling.
Well, you and the Babadook.
Right. And Slenderman or whatever. I feel like I don't remember having boogeyman kind of fears. Like I would go under my covers and pretend I was like hobbits escaping from the wraiths or whatever, hiding in my little hollow.
But you could hide.
It was like cozy and pleasurable. It was not like, if I peek out, like there's going to be a talon.
How did you feel about ghosts?
I'm in favor of them.
No, but I mean, were you scared of them?
No. Like, you think that's a different category to you?
Can you get yourself freaked out thinking about UFOs if you're alone in the night?
No. Does this happen to you? Like, is this the kind of anxiety?
Because
mine is like, what if my children are growing away from me?
Right.
And you're like,
they are.
And you're like, what if the saucer men come?
For whatever reason, I have a long relationship with UFOs. And
insist on saying it that way.
And they do make periodic appearances in my room at night.
Ah.
One time, a long, long time ago, I woke up in the middle of the night and I was very awake and very conscious. And all of my pillows had turned to owls. They were all still.
Were they alive owls?
Yes. They were all the size and shape of pillows, but they were like snowy owls. And I have like 7 pillows around my bed.
Well, that's when you got to start cutting down on pillows. You don't want 7 owls in your bed.
And there were owls all around. There was a pillow on the floor that had turned to an owl. They were all looking at me.
Let me ask you this. What species of owl?
They were snowy owls, big, white, fluffy, pillow-shaped owls.
Big Twin Peaks, otherworld owls.
And I was fully awake, and I realized that there was nothing to be done. And so I just grabbed the nearest owl and
murdered it.
No, I snuggled up inside its little owl breast and went back to sleep. Well, later on, recounting this to people, a lot of people said, oh, you know, owls are UFO symbology, right? Like if you have dreams about owls or you see owls in the night, it's always like a UFO encounter.
So I understand that from Twin Peaks, but that doesn't make any sense to me because they have big eyes.
I don't know why. Yeah, I guess probably big eyes.
I guess they're the species of bird that looks most like an alien gray.
Yeah, they're the grays. But I can absolutely, if I'm laying in bed and reading a book about UFO encounters or there's no.
Well, here's your problem.
You're so frustrated when I feel I say like UFO.
Why do I have to say Roderick 3 syllables, but you can't say UFO 3 syllables? I am sick of the double standard.
Well, because like UFO includes, it's a way of describing both the alien and the
kind of the paranormal.
Yeah. And the experience, right? It's and the machine. It's not just the machine. It's also the creature. Both can be UFOs.
The creature is an UFO.
The creature
must
can
stand,
be an UFO.
It must stand for something else then. It can't stand for unidentified flying object.
Well,
unless it's an owl.
At this point, it gets it's
unidentified
like,
feathered owl.
It's like snafu. When you say snafu, you don't think of what it originally meant. You don't say this is everything's gone foobar, and like you know.
I do think that, and I think fouled up. I don't even think of the other thing.
Fouled up beyond recognition.
So, I love when they actually said that in the 40s and 50s, they'd be like a military acronym for fouled up beyond our recognition. And I'm sure half the audience is like, wow, fouled up. I hate it when things get fouled
pretty
up.
Pretty strong language.
It's pretty fouling strong. So the owls are not what they seem. They are pillows.
Well, but so I.
And aliens both.
I can, in the middle of the night, get a cold. I can feel a cold hand and wake up with a start. And I used to like wake up and jump out of bed, like into combat posture. Now I just.
Like a martial arts.
Like, yeah. Yeah, ready to defend. Now I wake up with a start. I'll turn the light on really fast. I'll sit there. I'll hyperventilate for a second.
And you'll still be in the movie theater.
Yeah, that's right. And then it turned out Michael Jackson wasn't a zombie. He was just my date. He was like, are you okay?
So I feel like I see the problem here. Your story began as I nodded off to sleep reading my book about UFO abductions.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked to find.
That, right.
Have you considered maybe not reading 70s UFO abduction books before sleep?
Absolutely do not now. I do not now. And I won't watch a movie that's not only UFO, but also scary, like anybody creeping into the house, you know, the phone calls coming from within the house. I don't want to see any of that stuff. Because it does. It affects me late at night. Because I live alone. That's another thing, right? I mean, you live with a family all around you.
A family that dislikes me, though.
Right.
So it amounts to much the same thing.
But if the call comes from within the house, you're going to be like, Dylan, is that you? I mean, you're going
to... You're supposed to put your phone in the kitchen at 10:30.
But, you know, I live out here in the sticks on a big property with a, you know... With a barn.
Does your barn have owls?
It's full of creatures. That's why I keep a hat rack full of swords by the front door, just in case I need to. You know, a sword is ineffective at dealing with an intruder, but it's great at dealing with supernatural beings.
Is that true?
Well, sure.
As everyone knows.
You can't shoot them. You have to fight them with a sword.
Because it's cold steel?
Well, because they're Masonic swords.
Oh, they have Illuminati iconography
right.
on them.
That's right. They're charged with the all-seeing panopticon.
You need to go to bed reading a book about something... Comforting.
Calming.
Compound interest.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about just reading a long book about compound interest?
just reading Thorstein Veblen?
Do you know what my wife actually does? Is she will turn on like the most boring podcast she can find on
her
phone.
Wait a minute.
It's.
Are you subtweeting me right now?
No, she loves the dollop. Oh. No, I'm just kidding. It's not any specific show. Certainly not one of yours.
Right.
But she'll just listen to, you know, some podcast about financial planning or about somebody's semester abroad in Finland or whatever. Boy. And she'll just put that on her earbuds and nod right off. It's the great gift of...
Financial planning would cause me anxiety, too.
I guess that's true. I have no... How much retirement am I supposed to have at age 50? It's scary. It's like the Simpsons joke. Like, there's a ghost story around the campfire and the punchline is, and that's how much college is going to cost for Maggie. I have the same problem sleeping today if my mind is churning and working overtime. Mm-hmm. But I kind of have, if I get into a routine, I'm not a guy who can sleep on a plane I don't even nap that well. Mm-hmm. But if it's kind of my time and I've read for an hour and now I'm in bed, I just kind of float away to dreamland.
I can sleep sitting up. I can sleep on airplanes. I can sleep in a chair in a bus station.
Let me ask you this. Do you know about the thing about how old-timey people presumably... or allegedly slept sitting up?
Really?
Have you ever been in a historic building and had the guide or the docent say, because if you go to old houses, I was in Shakespeare's house once, he wasn't home, but the thing you notice in these Elizabethan houses
was Francis Bacon's house?
Yeah, it wasn't actually Shakespeare. It wasn't the fake guy. We should do a show about the dummies who think that Shakespeare is not Shakespeare.
Yeah, there are so many.
Unless you're one of them.
No, I'm not one of them. Although I've spent an awful lot of time reading the Shakespeare conspiracies. I don't know why.
I love that there's some goofy Hollywood action producer. Who is it? Is it Bruckheimer or somebody who's... No, it's Roland Emmerich who's convinced from his reading that he's figured out. And he actually greenlit a movie with, you know, who knows? Probably Jeffrey Rush or Colin Firth.
Right.
And or maybe both about how it was actually
Descartes Thomas Aquinas.
The Earl of whoever.
Yeah.
Or a time traveling Hemingway.
Right.
Or UFOs who actually wrote Macbeth. Why was I saying this? Oh, I'm in Shakespeare's house. Again, he's not home. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the rafters are very low. The beds are very small. And I'm like, to my wife, I'm like, hey, it's because people were shorter back then due to nutrition.
And then the docent hears
you. The docent gets so angry. People were the same height. I'm so tired of hearing this. People were the same height in medieval times.
They were not the same height.
Spoilers, they were not the same height. There's low protein diets. There's famines all the damn time.
Yeah, like, people were 4'11".
People literally were like the low end of the 5 to 6 foot range. Like people were 5'3 or 5'6 or whatever in medieval times.
But he's mad. The docent is both ill-informed and mad.
She's mad. Please don't assume.
Pardon me.
Please don't assume that this hectoring British person.
They were mad and they were ill-informed.
I don't know their pronouns, but yes, they were angry. And the reason why beds are small has nothing to do with height. They were all our height, but they slept sitting up.
Well, you know, when the King Tut exhibit came to the United States in the 1970s.
Did you know my mom? Have I said this? My mom worked there.
No, at the Seattle Center?
Yeah, she volunteered at the Science Center. So we got free tickets to King Tut.
That's insane because the line went all the line was like 2 miles long to see King Tut.
The line went all the way to Cairo.
But that's when we first saw those Egyptian pillows. They described them as pillows, which were just pedestals, like right. head pedestals. And
these can't turn into an owl.
Ever since I was 7 years old, I've tried to imagine what it would be like sleeping with your head on an Egyptian pillow.
Were they like these marble cylinder things?
Yeah, well, there was nothing soft about them. Right. They were like cradles.
Were they stone?
No, they were wood, I think, but like carved wood, but sort of elevated head cradles that just felt like, I mean, I guess that would be a good pillow if you were trying to keep pinching insects out of your ears, but like not a thing that you could really cuddle up with.
You don't see people walking off planes with like a wooden horseshoe around their neck.
Right.
Like they're an oxen.
Yeah.
But she's apparently there's very little evidence for this idea that people
like slept setting up.
But there are tons of small beds that are smaller than they should be. But, you know, the other thing that for many years, there was little evidence of the phenomenon second sleep. What time are we at here?
Oh, I see. That's now a thing on our Facebook page, fan group, trying to celebrate how long it takes us to actually mention the topic.
Some complaining.
It's 26 minutes into the show when you mentioned second sleep.
It's useful for people because now they know how much they can skip next time.
Mm-hmm.
26 minutes and we'll be like, so...
you were saying.
So, the Battle of Cana.
Tell me about second sleep, Ken Jennings.
For many years, we just assumed, I feel like Proust, for many years I went to bed early.
Mm-hmm.
For many years, we assumed that everybody slept like we do, at night. When else would you sleep, right? Right.
For many years, I assumed that everyone had my musical taste.
That's why you're always just going up to randos in line at the bank and starting the conversations about AC/DC.
Yeah, right.
And they don't give it.
Can you imagine Bob Rock just sitting there recording each string of a Def Leppard guitar part?
Sir, I'm calling the police. We assume that of all the things that have probably changed, we're okay with the idea that recreation changed, the workday, it used to be kids in coal mines for 18 hours and now it's different.
All kinds of values have changed.
Foods are probably different. Sure. Like in our lifetime, when I was a kid, Ted Danson was doing blackface routines.
Right.
That should be an entry in the omnibus.
Well, and I think that this is...
We assume that stuff changes very quickly.
That it changes quickly and that it changes rapid, or not just quickly, but that it changes often. Like the value, sure. American values between 1930 and now have changed 50 times and, pretty radically.
Some of our country clubs have our Jewish friends in them.
Come on.
It's crazy.
Come on. They have their own country clubs.
They don't want to be in our crappy. All of our country clubs are in severe decline.
Those poor waspy country clubs. People tried so hard.
The real victims. But we assume that sleep, I think, must be the one thing that has been unchangeable. Poet Philip Sidney called it the poor man's wealth. Sleep is the poor man's wealth. It's the prisoner's release. This idea that it's a thing, a universal thing we all share.
Well, because it feels pre-cultural, right? I mean, we all sleep when we're tired and we wake up when we're rested. And so it doesn't seem like something that would be susceptible to having cultural influence or habit. Right.
It would be like, are there cultures that fart differently? No, yeah. Sometimes your body just needs to sleep.
Well, I don't know about that. I know a lot of people that have never farted.
Is that true?
Well, never farted around me.
Let's list all the people who have never... I'm going to name a person, and you're going to tell me whether or not they have farted around you.
Okay, go.
George Eastman, inventor of Kodak.
Never farted around me.
Is that right?
Yeah. No, not a single time. He's very chaste.
President Warren G. Harding.
Warren G. Harding did fart quite a bit, actually, when we were camping.
French actress, animal rights activist, Brigitte Bardot.
Oh, Brigitte Bardot. No. Well, her farts smell like roses.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah. She actually took the potion invented by Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin invented a potion?
Did you know that Benjamin Franklin, this is absolutely something we're going to talk about on this show. Benjamin Franklin spent a considerable amount of his intellectual capital trying to develop a tincture that would cause your farts to smell like roses.
Think how smelly.
He worked on this a lot.
So what are we thinking here? That he was just tired of other people farting, or was his gas so awful that he needed this so desperately?
I feel like a lot of his work has benefited us even unto now. Like he was a humanitarian, and I feel like he, from moment to moment, had ideas of sort of varying degrees of success. And he spent all that time in France.
And Sweden.
And I think there are probably a lot of bad smells. And he...
Way to piss off the French for no reason.
The French are very perfumed right at this time.
Because they smell so bad.
And there's also, they're going poop behind curtains and stuff. There was no indoor plumbing then.
But that's not specific to France, John.
No, no. It was just the French. Everyone else had toilets.
Every other country had, and the French were like, I will not poop. I will not defecate there.
It is too long to walk.
The curtain is closer. Benjamin Franklin is one of many men of his time who actually slept differently than we do today. He's on the record as being a biphasic sleeper.
Really?
Here's what that means. In 1992, a researcher named Thomas Ware did a groundbreaking study on short photo periods. He took people away from the world of artificial lighting and made sure they only got light for 10 hours a day. 14 hours of darkness, 10 hours a day. Just to see what would happen to their circadian rhythms and their sleep cycles.
Sure, he got a government grant.
It's like the thing where you make sure your baby is raised by coyotes just to see if they will eventually speak the language of Adam and Eve.
Right, the coyote language.
No,
Adam Which is Eve. What Adam and Eve spoke.
Adam and Eve spoke the coyote language.
You've read the Bible.
They held up signs like Wile E. Coyote. like you know how Wile E. Coyote doesn't talk, but he holds up a little sign saying, right. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
That's why like Eve eats an apple and Adam has a little sign, uh-oh, and then God falls on him.
Beep, beep.
So what Thomas Ware found when you expose people to shorter photo periods is that they
slept more,
sleep in chunks. They will take two naps a day lasting between 3.5 and 4 hours with a gap in between them. And this seemed pretty invariable. Their sleep would eventually go from a big 8 hour chunk to this. And it's interesting because, you know, 10 hours of light a day is kind of what spring and fall would be like in a lot of Northern Europe in a society with no artificial lighting.
Right.
And he wondered, could this be how sleep used to be? Is this a more natural mode of sleep?
So when you say two naps a day, are you saying that that constitutes the entirety of their sleep?
Yeah.
They take 2 4-hour naps in the course of 24 hours.
Yeah, basically they're getting the same amount of sleep the doctors recommend today, you know, 7 or 8 hours. They're just splitting it into chunks.
But does it happen during daylight hours as well as at night, or is it just during the 14 hours of darkness?
It was during their dark period. It was a very dark period for them. They, you know, it's when you would expect them to sleep, but he was not expecting them to segment their sleep like this.
And then, if they were sleeping 8 hours during this 14-hour period, that means that they were also awake for 6 hours in the middle of the night?
No, they wouldn't sleep at the beginning of the dark period and then again at the end necessarily. Oh. But there would be a gap of, I think, between 1 to 3 hours in his study. And in 2001, a Virginia Tech researcher named Roger Ekirch published a groundbreaking article, Sleep We Have Lost, Pre-Industrial Slumber in the British Isles. Mm. Inspired by Ware's research, he went back into the historical record to see if he could find cases of people sleeping in what appears to be this natural way, segmented into two periods. And sure enough, like literary works are full of references. In the Arabian Nights, a character says, tell me a story, sister, so as to pass the waking part of the night. Mm. The waking part of the night. There's a character in Chaucer's Squire's Tale, one of the Canterbury Tales, named Canacee. And she decides, quote, to go to rest soon after it was evening, and slept her first sleep, and then awoke. Her first sleep. Same thing in Don Quixote. Don Quixote followed nature, and being satisfied with his first sleep, did not solicit more. Whereas Sancho just sleeps through the night like a log, like a weirdo. And the weird thing about all these references is they're not explained. It appears to be a commonplace thing that the reader understands that characters will have a first sleep and a second sleep. So we'd been reading these texts for centuries and had not even noticed this fact, that people are sleeping weird before the 17th century.
Now, I'm going to push back on second sleep. I don't want to push back on it until you have laid out the case for second sleep. Because I think it's a fascinating case.
Like you're going to say it's not good, or you think it doesn't exist?
Well, I feel like things like these literary references, like the waking part of the night and first sleep, and then I didn't engender a second one and this type of thing. When I read those references, just like we all did, the reason that they didn't stand out as describing a thing that was universal in the time, which is two sleeps, I think it's that they are describing a kind of insomnia, or they're describing a feeling of like, you know, the waking part of the night, which is that you wake up and then you're awake at night. And so I think this is an example of going back into the literary record and finding what you want to find. Or it could be. There is just as much a possibility that this is bias confirmation rather than actually the way people thought then, because if it was, I think there would be actually more in the written record actually that elucidates it, or that specifically, like, we all went to bed at dusk and then woke up and had our potluck and had our sex party.
That thing that, as you know, everyone does.
Yeah, right. Rather than finding it encoded kind of in this, like, in a literary device.
Well, it turns out there are more, you're in luck, there are more explicit references.
Oh, let's hear them.
And I think you're not wrong, though. I think I was looking at some of, you know, E. Kirch claims to have found references to First and Second Sleep in Homer's Odyssey, for example, and in Gilgamesh. And when I looked at those, it kind of fell apart a bit. Like the Greek that is often translated in Homer as, and in his first sleep, the better translation is probably, and shortly after falling asleep. You know, it really just means soon after he fell asleep, in his first moments of sleep.
Right.
So yes, he is definitely prone to see his theory where it is not in the manner of all researchers of everything.
Right.
But there is more specific reference, including people doing it firsthand.
Oh, let's hear it.
Benjamin Franklin, you mentioned, for example.
My hero.
He liked to get up in the middle of the night. He'd sleep for 3 or 4 hours. He'd get up. He would open all the windows, take off all his clothes, uh-huh. and sit in a chair and read. He called this a cold air bath. Uh-huh. And it makes me wonder if that was the only kind of bath he was taking, you know?
But I feel like that is evidence that Ben Franklin was a kook and a crank, less evidence that it was a commonplace or a popular thing to do.
Okay, how about this? It would actually be part of
I'm going to try that, by the way, the cold air bath.
you can try it right now. You don't have the windows open, but I'm here.
Sitting in a chair, naked, just sort of like pinching your nipples in the middle of the night.
And reading your UFO paperbacks. Oh, this is good. Why does he have to have the windows open? I wonder if
felt so alive.
I wonder if there's some kind of exhibitionism in Dr. Franklin's nighttime habits. Because there is also evidence of people going out and about. We have journals where people go to visit friends and chat with neighbors, implying that they are up as well. And it's not a weird time to actually do some social stuff.
Right. I find those accounts more convincing. That seems...
I'm working my way up, okay. John.
All right.
When you think about the, whatever you call it, the nocturnes, the daily clock of prayer that religious people would use, today, the prayer called Matins is done in the morning. It's one of the lauds. It's the first prayer that you would say in the morning.
It's right there in the name.
Yes, matinee. But Matins just means morning. And medievally, apparently, this was a prayer you would say at like in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m., 2 in the morning. So there were multiple prayers that people would get up at night and say. So often what you would do with this waking hour is you would say your prayers.
But now this feels like a little bit of maybe a little cart before the horse. Like religious kooks will do all kinds of weird things, including get up in the middle of the night to say prayers.
Well, yeah, what weirdos.
This
is why we need the new atheism, to stop these guys from waking up at night and saying a prayer.
Saying loud prayers with all their windows open, bare naked.
I don't think they're saying it loud.
But you know what I mean? Like if this is a religious observance,
sure.
That does not necessarily prove that this is...
Except at the time, saying a bunch of prayers a day would be a near universal religious experience. This is not, you know, in our time, yeah, like, who's the one guy in your neighborhood who does that?
Me.
It's John. Who are you praying to, by the way, at
Cthulhu.
2 a.m.?
Cthulhu.
You're praying to King Tut.
Please, owls, do not peck my eyes out.
Ever since you saw King Tut's golden mask as a boy, you've been like, this is my god now. People would write about how they would just get up and have a nice smoke for an hour.
I've done that.
That's appealing. People would pee. Obviously, that's something that happens today.
Now, I do believe that that's true. People do get up in the night and pee.
And sometimes I have the problem where I will get up and then I'm at an age where I can no longer... I have to think about what time I have like my last beverage in the evening. Not coffee, but any liquid. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, 9 o'clock, I'm probably going to have to pee around 3 a.m.
When do I want that pee?
And sometimes I cannot get back to sleep. So I don't sit naked in a chair.
Oh, you have that problem. If you wake up in the middle of the night, it's hard to get back to sleep.
Sometimes, especially if there's something else going on, jet lag or you know, something I know is going to happen in the morning. I'm a terrible first night in a hotel room sleeper.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Do you unpack when you stay in a hotel room? Do you put your stuff in the drawers?
When I see that in movies, I think it's the weirdest thing. Like when I see somebody taking folded clothes out of their suitcase and putting in drawers in a hotel, I'm like, are you an E.M. Forster character? Like, what is going on
My
here?
My mom unpacks her suitcase and puts everything away in the drawers when she stays in a hotel.
I like staying in like an Airbnb for a week. Like, here's my rule. If it's a place with a kitchen, I will unpack my clothes.
Interesting.
If the place has no kitchen, no, they come out of the suitcase.
Huh.
Sometimes I will put dirty laundry in a drawer. How about that?
Oh, just that, and you leave it there for the housekeeper?
I leave it for the next guest.
Yeah, you're rich enough that you don't have to clean your clothes anymore.
I pick out my outfit for the trip, and then I leave it in Baltimore or whatever. Well, I don't want it stinking up the new clothes.
I see what you're saying.
We have accounts of people writing in journal and pondering dreams specifically. Like, because when you wake up, dreams are very fresh in your head. So if you have this hour in the night to contextualize your dreams, typically I only remember the thing I was dreaming right when I first woke up. But this would give you twice the surface area of dreams, so to speak.
Well, so I hate to refer to a sleep researcher, as you know. In the context of our friendship, I hardly ever refer to a sleep researcher.
And when you do, you talk about your deep disgust and distaste for it.
Here I go again.
I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do that thing.
But there is a book by a sleep researcher named Dr. Matthew Walker called Why We Sleep. And in his research, he describes the phases of sleep and says that in the first part of the night, the earlier part of the night, you're in deep, deep, like catatonic sleep almost.
That's not your REM sleep.
You're not REMing at all. Your body goes all the way down into a kind of neural processing mode where, like we were talking about before, the building blocks of your memory are being shifted around. But you're not in that state of where your body is paralyzed because you're not actually dreaming. You're just moving building blocks around. Mm-hmm. And REM sleep is really reserved. It's the last sleep you have. Right. In the course of the night, which again suggests that this wake up halfway through the night and ponder your dreams thing is some kind of medieval hornwash.
It's not hogwash. It's a medieval. And it's not hornswoggle.
No,
it's hornwash. Both. It's so false that it's both hogwash and hornswoggle.
It's hog swallow or hornwash.
Well, I think people at the time must have known this in some sense. One of the words they use, we see in the literature for first sleep, is death sleep.
Oh, death sleep.
Like they were aware that this was a much stiller, deeper sleep than what they were getting the second time.
If only.
The sweet release.
If only death sleep would come.
They would also say beauty sleep. There was some folk belief that that was where you would get your rejuvenation and your cheeks would pink and whatever. Another medical belief about the first segment of sleep, if we allow for a moment that it's not hornwash, is that sex in the middle of the night was the most productive, the most likely to lead to conception.
I can confirm that.
How could you possibly confirm that? There's a medical text from 16th century France in which a doctor specifically advises couples having a hard time conceiving to do it after the first sleep. And he does not say, hey, try this weird thing, this weird hornwash, where you wake up in the middle of the night and then have sex. He actually says, you know, after the first sleep, try it out. He says people who do this, A, have more enjoyment, and B, do it better.
Hmm.
Do it better.
Now, how can he prove that?
Well, he's been going around his neighborhood.
Ding dong.
He just peeps in windows. And at the time, there's no cameras, so he's a sketch artist. He's doing engravings at people's windows of technique.
Pointillist engravings of them, like, having sex standing up against a wall.
Pointillist pointers.
Which is another thing that they say increases your chances of procreation, to have sex standing up.
Not super relevant to this topic, though.
No, but,
you were visualizing.
Look, I have my own research.
I have my own rich inner life. I can't always, like, stop imagining.
But again, when you say, when you quote that passage, you say, after first sleep, as though, I mean, just in the way that you say it out loud, there is a little confirmation bias just because you're pronouncing it in a sense that
and you're hearing after first sleep.
Right, exactly. Like
after you first sleep for a bit.
You could put a different cadence on it and it would seem less like the quote was inferring a commonality.
You're a determined second sleep skeptic.
Well, I'm very skeptical. I'm not saying that it is, because when I first heard the theory, it really resonated with me. Like, oh, right, of course. There was something all along true about us that
we have lost with civilization.
I'm super and susceptible to that stuff, right? Like, oh, something was lost, and now that we've discovered second sleep, everything will make sense again.
That's something very personal to you. All the broken things will be fixed.
Yes.
If only polyphasic sleep.
Yes, modernity. Like, we've solved the problem. Ever since the Industrial Revolution, we've lost our second sleep.
You're Brian Wilson. You were not made for this time.
But I have found that because I'm a perfect candidate for, if this is a natural process, right? If this is a natural rhythm, I would be a perfect candidate to have experienced it firsthand. Because for years I had no obligations and lived in a northern climate, you know, like it would have manifest itself. And I do sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and go get a glass of water, but I do not, you know, that's not a time in the when I feel especially sexy or procreative. I never get up and go out and visit my neighbors.
So your evidence here, despite a vast corpus of contemporaneous text attesting to this, it cannot be true because you don't do it.
No, but I live in a culture where if there was something to this that wasn't, I mean, I'm not against the idea that second sleep was a cultural phenomenon of a time and a place.
You're just saying it's not any more natural or
if there were any people that were prepared to do it, it would be my cadre of artists and drunks.
Did you know we know someone who does second sleep routinely?
Who is it?
You have to guess. I'm going to name some French movie stars.
is it George Meyer?
It is our writer friend, George.
Well, you know, now George is a Ben Franklin-like character, right?
He invented bifocals.
Who could absolutely set about to second sleep as either a project or as a thing.
I asked him about it.
To do.
I asked him about it once. It is not a project to him. Well, here's one thing about second sleep that may not, or biphasic sleep or whatever, that may not lend itself to your particular chronotype or lifestyle or sexy self-image or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Is that it requires going to bed early. Like, these people would all
go to bed at dusk.
Yeah, the evening would wind down. They maybe don't even have candles in their homes. So they all go to bed at 8 o'clock and they're up at midnight raring to go.
Right.
And that's something we cannot approximate unless we throw out our TVs and phones and
electric lights
and all our lighting.
Cars.
That big neon light you have in your window that says wild times.
Sex now.
Why do you even have that?
Here, sex here. It says it in French and most of my neighbors don't speak French. So
le sex ici. Oh, speaking of which, the French do have a word for this period in the middle of the night, a beautiful word. And again, evidence that it must be a thing if you make a word for it.
Fromageois?
It is called fromageois, which means cheese of the forest. No, it's called dorvée, which means wake sleep.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It is.
Why do two guys even know what dorvée means?
Two guys?
Like who? Sorry, that's a Fight Club reference. I shouldn't have made it.
I thought we were the two guys.
We are the two guys. We now both know what dorvée means.
In English language text, it's often called the watch, you know, like related to the military habit that someone has to be, or maybe nautical habit that someone has to be up, I guess.
Well, and this is a thing, I mean, so in reading about sleep, which I've done quite a bit of, trying to figure out what my habit is, right?
Probably trying to sleep. You're in the middle of the night reading.
I do not typically go to sleep until 4 o'clock in the morning.
So you're not a good candidate.
But I do, but there is this sense of the watch of a group of mammals who are part of a cult, part of a family or a tribe, needing individuals. I'm not going to say people because I'm not speciesist, but
you don't know what word our future listeners identify.
Who knows? As. Beings. There need to be a certain small percentage of beings within the family group or tribal group that are up all night because everyone is vulnerable. The majority of the pack is vulnerable to predators.
And do you feel like that when you're up at night? Do you feel like you're a little meerkat standing outside the burrow?
I do. I am on watch. I do go out and walk around the neighborhood and patrol. I do.
And do you write nasty notes, anonymous notes to your neighbors?
Not generally. I have.
Please cease with the beat a diddle music after 10 o'clock, signed the neighborhood.
But for years, I would go out and walk around with a sword.
You've said this on the show before, and I don't think I believe it ever.
It's true. Just because it was, I mean, there's no one else out. I wasn't doing it in order to be caught or seen.
Which is a good move, by the way.
Yeah, no. You don't want to be seen in a bathrobe carrying a sword like blocks from your house.
Not if you want to continue to live in your house.
But, you know, I would be kind of fencing supernatural beings and out, you know, like if a car would come, I would step into the shadows. I mean, I'm a weirdo.
No one hearing this story thinks you're a weirdo, John.
But I did feel there was something I felt like very innately that I was on watch. And I feel that at night.
I think about that a lot too, because a lot of the pleasure for me of being up at night is the idea that you're the special one who is here, you know, like you're experiencing a part of the world that the normals are not.
I am present.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that would be gone in a culture where the watch was the norm and you would wake up and, you know.
And everybody's out having tea and.
Right. And boinking their spouses and
you're pinching their nipples.
Your neighbor might come over. And if it's Ben Franklin, he might be naked. So George specifically says that he does not choose this. Like he will find himself, you know, tends to go to bed early and he'll wake up in the middle of the night and he'll find, you know, he has no problem nodding off in the evening. But once he wakes up, he finds that he's very wakeful and it takes some activity. He said usually sexual. And and so he and you do not have the same sex chronotype.
Thankfully, we live across town from one another.
I don't know what two birds you use for people who feel sexy at night and people who feel unsexy. The peacock and the what's the sexiest night bird?
Boy, the sexiest night bird. That is a great album
the
title.
The swallow. The sexiest night bird.
Oh, I don't want it to be the swallow. That's gross.
That was not a pun. Swallows dip around at dusk.
9 out of 10 things you say are puns.
Are dirty puns?
Yeah, you think now I'm claim I don't make dirty puns.
You think I'm just a walking episode of some British comedy duo?
Yeah, you're like a book that you would find in someone's bathroom. Ken's dirty puns.
I think you are hearing dirty puns where there are none. The swallow is a beautiful bird of dusk.
That may be true.
And you are not a beautiful bird of dust.
The
apparently.
Sexiest night bird, I think, is probably
the peacock who is a night watchman at that plant.
Okay, let's call it that. The night watchman peacock.
Right. Yeah. He's got a job to do, and
she's shrieking and
yeah. What a terrible night watchman.
Terrible night bird.
He would be. I guess he would scare off intruders at the plant.
No, it's the grouse. The grouse is the sexiest night bird.
I feel like a grouse is a very chubby bird.
Well, what's sexier that's than what you're the little for. Chub? Yeah.
I love my thick night bird.
Come on, thick with two C's.
So, you know, even in our time, you and I know people who practice second sleep. George says he'll take an Ambien, but he prefers not to. He likes to just wait and after an hour or two, nod off.
I know people that go to sleep at 8 p.m. and wake up at 4 a.m., but that's because they got 8 hours of sleep.
Well, your math doesn't. Oh, no. Your math totally checks out.
Beep.
No, you can leave that in.
No, I was going to leave it in. That was a beep of...
That was the bad math beep.
Yeah, math beep.
That you always used to do when you were a junior high teacher.
But if you go to bed at 8, you can wake up in the middle of the night and start reading the New York Times.
I try this when I have an early flight. I can't get to sleep at 8.
No, you have to be insane to get to sleep at 8. You have to be one of these cockadoodles or whatever you call them.
Look at the cockadoodles. I often have this idea that I could do it gradually. Like, I think about this for jet lag. Like, could I get myself on Tokyo time if I just, like, moved up my sleep an hour a day, like I'm on a cruise ship or whatever?
Living on Tokyo time.
Is that also a good name for a...
Well, no, that was a living on Tulsa time reference.
Tulsa and Tokyo have a lot in common.
They really do. There are more churches in Tokyo than anywhere else in Japan.
Right. People having sex with pillows.
Mm-hmm. A lot of oil.
What was I even saying?
Oh, you.
Oh, my idea for beating jet lag. I see.
Right.
Right.
Does it work? Can you do it? Can you force yourself to change your habits?
I've never tried it. But there are people who, you know, there are all these online accounts today of people intentionally pushing their sleep habits to what they feel is the max. Inventor and visionary Buckminster Fuller was one of these guys who was always reading accounts of, you know, how the super smart and achieving among us could, you know, you always read accounts of how Tesla only slept for 2 hours a night and Margaret Thatcher slept for 4 hours a night and she spent the other 4 hours, you know,
right,
sucking baby's blood or whatever.
Yeah, right. Famously.
You know, there's this idea that people who sleep less are getting a bigger bite of the apple than the rest of us.
And people that wake up early are more virtuous than people that sleep late and...
Ben Franklin again, man. Early to bed, early to rise.
Which I feel is a kind of...
He meant early to rise at 2 a.m. when you sit naked in a chair.
That's right. I have always felt that that was discriminatory, that it was not that me staying up late, and I think you concur, right? Staying up late is not
it doesn't because make you a better
lazy.
Person.
Yeah, right. I don't get up early in the morning and hustle off to work, but I also like don't feel that I'm a scofflaw.
I have to admit that a lot of the enjoyment I get from being up late is not just the sense of solitude and disconnection, but it's also kind of like you're on a plane. You have ideas because you're unmoored.
Yeah.
But it's also just the idea that I've procrastinated something, which is bedtime.
Right.
And you could say that maybe I'm a bad lazy person because I'm putting something off I could do now. Or you could say that I'm a amazing two marshmallow kid who can defer pleasure for achievement.
You wait for that second marshmallow. You're not just going to gobble the first one.
Right. So maybe it's more virtuous to put off sleep.
I have always felt personally that I avoid going to sleep until I absolutely am forced to. Like I abhor going to sleep. But then once I'm asleep, I abhor waking.
It's just inertia. You like the thing you're currently doing.
Well, or and also like I resist sleep. Like I don't know whether I've never really looked at it so closely as to think maybe I am that I fear sleep, but
because it's death.
I certainly avoid it. Like I will stand on the precipice of sleep and just slap my face and throw cold water on myself to avoid tumbling over that edge. But then once I'm there, I do not want to rejoin the world and will do the same thing, kind of claw, like hold on to sleep as I feel wakefulness coming. You know, it takes me kicking and screaming.
You want to stay.
Yeah.
The reason I brought up Buckminster Fuller is because he had this idea that sleep could be even more polyphasic. He called it dimaxion sleep.
On.
Because do you know this about Bucky Fuller? That he invented, like he used the word dimaxion for like any cool thing. Like he sounds insufferable. Oh, I've just invented the dimaxion closet. The shoes are on the top, you know, or here's my dimaxion house. It's every side is a hexagon.
Can we start using dimaxion?
I think
what did he mean by it?
It just means like, I think it just means like cool and special to me.
Uh-huh.
Like I think we would have to make up our own word.
We could just start using omnibus in that way. Yeah. Oh, this is the omnibus closet.
Hornwash.
This is a horn wash.
and in his mind, dimaxion sleep was to sleep 2 hours total over a 24-hour period in 4 30-minute chunks.
Now, I've heard of this being a thing that people do.
It had a revival recently. I think a woman named Maria Staver called it Uberman sleep, which really shows who is into this. It's all these,
these
weirdo Ayn Rand readers who are like, I'm better than the normals. I only need, you know, I'm a can-do guy. I'm starting up a company and I only need 2 hours of sleep.
Yeah, they're eating Soylent and sitting and peeing into a milk jug because they don't want to stop coding.
The idea is you miss out on that dead time and you go straight to REM sleep, which in their mind is good. And I don't know if the sleep research would actually bear out.
I think the sleep research says, in fact, no, you cannot do that. You cannot just go straight to REM sleep. It's the other sleep, the dead sleep is the sleep that is the most important. If your body has to sacrifice one, it will sacrifice REM and get the dead sleep first.
So if you're saying if you had to choose between two things, you would choose the dead over REM?
Whew. If I could choose the entire catalog of the dead or of REM, boy, I'm not a deadhead, but and you and I disagree on this. The second half of the REM catalog is very problematic for me. I think you go all the way through, don't you? You're all the way to Up.
I like REM as a trio. I like the last record, Collapse Into Now.
You just listen to it all, even up there where you can hear. We can hear the vocals clear and proud.
And they don't make it, and they're not that great.
Yeah.
It turns out you should have been mumbling.
Yeah.
But the dead do not speak to me.
At all.
The dead do not speak to me. No.
they come to me every night.
They keep their secrets, John.
Even Terrapin Station, you can't get into. You just don't. You're just shrugging it off like it ain't no thing.
Wrong generation, I guess. So. And I guess it's easy to make fun of hippies. So maybe it's just prejudice.
Yeah, well, it's the weird thing where the name Grateful Dead suggests that it's going to be kind of metal. And then you listen to it and it's like this meandering folk with like a bass line that never plays the same note twice.
Yeah, I mean, jam bands in general, I think, are trouble. I kind of want, I'm like, you know, get to the point. You know, if I hear 26 minutes of a podcast and they don't talk about second sleep, I'm like, okay, Jerry, we get it.
Nice solo.
You know, you mentioned the kind of weird visionary quality of this time of night when everybody's pillows turn into alien owls.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is a kind of like a half wakefulness.
It's a dorvet, to coin a phrase.
It's a dorvet where, like lots of things happen in the night that feel supernatural or feel otherworldly.
And I was kind of wondering, you know, because this same time period is when we have lots more people just having firsthand visionary experiences. Saints who see gods and monsters and miracles, they seemed more in touch with whatever part of the brain produces that. And I kind of wonder if sleep habit has something to do with it. Like if you and I had an hour in the middle of the night where we were just in an island of wakefulness between sleep and we were kind of alone and thinking about our dreams and in the dark, like would we have more of these kind of, would we have God, you know, as we understand him, whether mm-hmm. that's a saintly kind of a miracle or, you know, evil snowy owls?
I mean, I have sought God all my life. And I often feel that modernity intrudes on what would have seemed godly or would sure. have seemed like the...
I can ponder the universe, but I've got six more episodes of American Vandal to get through tonight.
Yeah, or I can ponder the universe, but I also hear like...
Did you say fondle the universe?
I can fondle the universe. I do. I can sit and think that stuff, but then I hear 18-wheelers like double Jake brakes going off down mm-hmm. on the highway like... Bah, bah.
You almost had it. You're yeah. like, oh, wait, it's all so simple.
And then God evades me once again. But it would be nice, you know, like it's akin to our disconnection from the stars, right? These medieval times you're talking about, you could step outside into the cold air completely naked, pinching your nipples and look up and see the Milky Way. And to walk out in the night now, living in a city as I do, I just see
light pollution.
Yeah, I just see a dome of
light. You see six stars and like five of them are airplanes.
So we're considerably disconnected from our, well, what would have been the experience of a human at any point in our 50,000 year history up until 80 years ago.
I guess that's my theory, that atheists and skeptics of all kinds just aren't sleeping right.
And that concludes Second Sleep. Entry 1122.ZC0401, certificate number 38846 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era,
speaking of things that diminish spirituality of all kinds,
and you are up late, late at night and do not have the self-discipline to not be surfing social media
of the distant past
in between your first and second sleeps,
turn on the Wayback Machine and see what was going on Twitter in the year of our Lord 2018.
You can find a handy resource of all of the omnibus episodes by going to our Twitter and Instagram feeds at Omnibus Project. Also, our handles were at Ken Jennings, where Ken does almost exclusively blue puns and fops.
Yeah, like I do red fox jokes from his party albums on Twitter.
And I am on Twitter basically just porting my Instagram over there, but every once in a while I'll go say something pithy.
Pictures of luminous owls? Do you ever feel like you've gotten photographic evidence of any of your visions?
Well, a lot of my fans from elsewhere have done fan art.
Fans from elsewhere? Are these extra dimensional beings?
Fans from elsewhere are a lot of the time.
Are they in this room, John?
A lot of the time they occupy the Venn diagram between your consciousness and mine. But those fans from elsewhere have done fan art of me in a room full of pet pillows, which have become owls. So I do have some images, a couple of them actually eerily accurate.
Are you nude? Are you pinching your nipples, Ben Franklin style?
I'm not. I am in my bed with my covers on, looking, you know, both. I was a little apprehensive in the moment, but also I felt a strange calm.
And is that conveyed in the fan art?
Yeah. I felt like the owls were watching over me as much as they were watching me.
That's the Twin Peaks thing.
There it is.
Do they come back?
I've never had them come back. I have woken up in the middle of the night and searched for them, but it's only been the once.
You've searched for them.
I mean, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I do look around and go...
You don't go through drawers.
No. I mean, they would be... They're right there. The pillows are all around me. But I don't often have those lucid states where you're lucidly awake, but also still
Like sleep paralysis people who imagine that a demon is crouched on their chest and they can't move or whatever?
I've never had that, and I do not want it. That is the type of thing I'd be very anxious about. Because I don't like claustrophobia.
I think anyone would.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun.
And I'm sure that's the source of a lot of kind of ideas about possession in different cultures.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
People that are just having bad dreams.
I'm glad we don't have that.
You and I, or futurelings.
Definitely you and I appear to not have it. I hope people in the future do not have... Certainly they will have evolved beyond sleep altogether. That's my theory.
I cannot imagine that. Because I don't see sleep as an impediment to evolution, or I don't see it as a deficit. I think sleep is a major
look. We are all bonus. Conditioned to enjoy these things. Of course, we see them as a bonus because you know we have to take pleasure in the things that perpetuate our.
But you're thinking
our chromosomes.
Sleep's just a downer, and that
I'm thinking that once it's no longer necessary, we will no longer find it pleasurable.
Hmm.
We're speaking to an audience that does not defecate.
You know, I had a friend.
All the things we love, they don't do.
They don't defecate.
They do not.
They just exude. They just exude particulate out of their.
It's inefficient. They can fully recycle.
Carapaces.
They can fully recycle all their waste materials.
Oh, I see. Sure. It turns into brown water. Then it turns into gray water. Then it turns back into water.
Yeah, it's all inside you.
The call is coming from within you. You can also go to my Instagram account, which is wonderful, and I highly suggest you do. I know there are a lot more listeners to this program than are currently on my Instagram account.
I was thinking about all the people listening to this who have not bought my book.
Right. All the people that are listening to this that don't follow you on Twitter and they're missing out.
They should certainly buy the book. I don't get any money if they follow me on Twitter.
I mean, they should download the Long Winter's entire corpus.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So what you should do right now, put down your listening device, go find the Long Winter's, all of our albums, and Ken's books, and buy them all now.
I think it's okay to start with one book and one record.
Download all my records and one of Ken's books. The most recent of Ken's books, Planet Funny.
Read all my books and tell John you enjoy his music. That's what I've been doing for years.
No. You're going to be quizzed on if you're like, oh, I love your band.
Oh, yeah?
Like,
which song?
Oh, really?
Tell me which records you liked more than the others.
Yeah. What's the song that speaks to you most?
And here's the thing you say then. You're like, oh, I like the second record.
Do not say you like the second record. Everybody says they like the second record.
I'm just saying, pick a number. I'm just saying, I love the lead track on the third record.
Yeah, nobody thinks that. the third track on the first record is not the song that people keep coming back to.
If somebody tried that, would you be like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. What's the name of that song? Would you try to catch them?
No, because I don't remember the names of songs either,
Wait,
including my own songs.
You don't remember the names of your songs?
No, not really. I forget them more often.
There should
than
be
not.
A Name That Tune style show where they ask you to name.
They ask songwriters to name the titles of their own songs.
That's right.
Oh, it's the one about the truck. I mean, we just, on the set list, we just say truck song. Anyway, you can also email us, and please do, at omnibusproject@howstuffworks.com. I don't mean email us just to pass the time, but email us with comments, things to say, nice thoughts, topics maybe. We get a lot of those. That's not necessary. You don't need a clever idea.
And we don't need more, certainly.
And also, if you do go on Facebook, I pity you, but the one good place on Facebook, in my estimation...
A sanctuary.
...is the Omnibus Futurelings Facebook page, where you find like-minded people who are having lots of yucks and lols.
Good, clean, vigorous fun.
That's right.
In the outdoors.
Generally an anti-swears policy over there. It's a pretty virtuous and yet still subversive group. And you can send us real mail, which I support you doing, at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
Did you do the email address? I can't remember.
I did. omnibusproject@howstuffworks.com.
I've only done it twice. Everything's thrown off.
omnibusproject@howstuffworks.com.
The owls are not what they seem. Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we don't know how long our civilization is going to survive. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, but the long sleep that comes for us all will hold off for another day. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word to you. But if the owls allow, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.